This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Health should not become what we call a commodity, a product to be bought and sold on the market as you would walk into a supermarket and you buy a doctor's fee. Can one put it more plainly than that?
But the problem is that I'm not a consumer, I'm a patient.
The concept of the open bar right now and with Medicare is driving irresponsibility.
Et c'est plus facile de couper un client que de couper un malade.
More and more doctors will be pulled into the private. We'll be waiting longer and longer in the public system.
As the public healthcare system seems to be deteriorating, the private side is taking up more and more space. We have heard from a community organizer and doctors from both the public and private sectors. Now, some patients will tell their stories.
I felt like my legs were really, really weak. Walking became like carrying two balls and chains around, like, if you get what I mean. And then basically, after that lasted for about a month and started to dissipate, started to go away. And then One day I just noticed that I wasn't seeing clearly out of my left eye and realized that something was going on with my vision. I let it go for about 2 weeks until I finally owned up to it to my mom in the pharmacy. And the pharmacist said, you need to go to an optometrist right now. Went to an optometrist, told the optometrist about the eyes. She asked if I had had any other symptoms. And the optometrist, when I told her about my other symptoms, plus the optic, which she called optic neuritis, she said this was like classic MS. They said that there weren't many MRIs around Montreal, MRI machines. They're very costly. The waiting list was going to be probably around 6 months. And that's when they recommended that I go to a private clinic in Westmount. Because the wait time for that would only be 2 weeks. They quoted the price for the MRI at $1,500. So I almost fell off my chair because I knew only $500 was covered by my private insurance. After hearing the price, I threw a fit and decided that I was not going to go through the private health system and pay $1,000 out of my pocket, because I've been working for a very long time and have paid lots of taxes to live in this society and to have this kind of thing covered.
My name's Brianna Percy. I'm 25 years old, and I've been chronically ill since I was 15. Well, when I was 15, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is a form of inflammatory bowel disease, and similar to Crohn's disease. It's an autoimmune deficiency. And basically, there are two routes of treatment. There's medical treatment with medications, oral, you know, things you stick up your butt, stuff like that, because it affects the large bowel or the colon, which are the same thing. And then small bowel and intestines, they're the same thing. So colitis affects the entire colon, which is from the anus right up the rectum, the sigmoid colon, ascending colon, transverse colon, descending colon, the whole big loop, that big U that people see in those diagrams in the doctor's office, that's the large bowel or the colon, and that's what gets sick with ulcerative colitis. They cut a little hole in your abdomen, and they pull up the small bowel there, and they sew it. So you have a little thing called a stoma, a little red part of your intestine that's sticking out of your abdomen. So it's right on your lower abdomen area, and you use a bag, and it's an external system, so it's outside of your body. If I had to pay for all of the surgeries and hospitalizations that I've undergone in the past 10 years, my family would be bankrupt. We would be in huge debt. But, I mean, the thing that people don't realize is that for a certain segment of the population that's unhealthy, the healthcare system in Canada is amazing. The healthcare system works. You know, if you are really sick, you are going to be seen. You really are. You know, when I've been really sick, I go into the emergency room. I'm seen within 15, 20 minutes. You know, I've got a bed. I have care. Emergency surgery happens within, you know, 24 hours, 36 hours. You know, if you are really sick, the healthcare system works. And people know this, but we don't talk about this. Where the health system goes wrong is for people that are sort of sick, are not really sick, or people that have that need bettering in their life. It's not as if they're going to die today or they need to be seen immediately, but their quality of life is could benefit significantly from being seen quicker in the healthcare system. People that need knee replacements, hip replacements, you know, certain types of surgeries, you know, these types of things. And then there's, of course, the other set of patients that are seen, which are the people that really, that clog up the emergency rooms. You know, there's a huge segment of the population that don't have doctors and that don't have primary health physicians. So they go to the doctor because they have a cold or because they don't have, they don't have anybody else to go to see. And in many of these cases, it is the individual's responsibility to find a physician. However, there's a huge lack of physicians. You've got people that are very low-grade illnesses that are really viruses, coughs, fevers, things like this. Then you've got the mid-level of people that need health care for improved quality of life. So you've got hip replacements, knee replacements, this sort of thing. And then you've got the people that are incredibly ill, that need treatment immediately. And those are the people that the system works really well for. And for me, the system's worked wonderfully well, amazingly well. When I was sick, I was seen immediately. But because I've been at both the virus, cold, sort of annoyance health level, and I've also been at the, well, I don't need this immediately, but it will improve my quality of life level. And then I've also been at the, oh my God, I'm in so much pain that and my stomach's going to explode level. You know, I've really been really lucky in a sense to get firsthand experience in the Canadian health care system at all different stages of sickness. A few weeks ago, I called my specialist. He's a very good specialist. He's one of the best colorectal surgeons in Quebec. I called. I got an appointment for 7 weeks. I was thrilled. I could not believe I was going to be seen in 7 weeks. I also realized that I needed a gynecological checkup, and I needed to have my regular physician continue with my blood levels for my anemia. So I called the clinic at McGill. 7.5 weeks it was going to take me to see a GP. 7.5 weeks to see a GP at McGill. It's insane. So what happens is that people overload the emergency care. They overload walk-in systems. They overload all of these temporary measures that, you know, there doesn't seem to be enough people really to be dealing with us.
Jack Godhill, an active member of the Health Action Committee at Project Genesis, remembers the days of private healthcare well, a memory that still haunts him.
My first job in health services, rather interesting, was on the other side of helping people. I graduated from high school in 1934. It was a period of the depths of what is known as the Great Depression, when large percentages of our population were out of work, and those who were working at miserable wages. My first job out of school came about 6 months after coming out of school. I landed a job at a collection agency. It was a commercial enterprise that acted on behalf of givers of service or goods who did not receive pay. Or simply, let's say a doctor, patient coming into the doctor. At that time, There was no Medicare. You paid for the service. And poor people, generally, who are not as healthy as others, demanding of service, went in, got the doctor's service, and whether it was $2, $3, or $4, in many instances, were not able to pay or were not able to pay the full fee. And after a period of time, if a payment was not received, the doctor would hand his account over to a collection agency. And I was at the counter to receive monies from the patients who received letters demanding payment and who came in with their funds. Part of the story is this, that the letters that we sent out were also devised in a, written in a legal fashion pertaining to demands that if the, suggesting that if these payments were not made, the recipient could possibly face legal problems. We had to be careful in the wording that this wasn't illegal, but suggestion. And we had a series of letters that went out. At that time, postage was about 2 cents, you know, you'd send them out. And according to the demands that went out, there were different kinds of letters presented almost in the form of a summons. It wasn't. But for many people receiving this, it suggested something of a legal nature, the law, and what it implied. Okay, well, this was the experience, and it was an unhappy experience. And I guess at that time I recall this now, because this is where I sort of sensed there was a lack of justice, a lack of fairness. People who, for no reason other than they were out of work on welfare, wasn't their fault, needed help, went to a doctor, got the help, and then were being hounded by, quote, this collection agency. And seeing how this was extracted from them gave me a sense of it's not fair.
There ain't no angels to bring me hope tonight.
Our offices were in downtown Montreal, in the University Tower building at that time, corner University and St. Catherine. And it wasn't uncommon to have somebody walk all the way down from Rosemont with a letter, owing $2 to $3 and coming in asking for, almost commiserating, I'm in trouble, I'm having difficulty, can I pay 50 cents a week or 25 cents a week? Or can you, don't hound me, I'm having a lot of difficulty. And you knew that when they brought in whatever it was, we would collect 25 cents, I mean, on a $2 bill. We got commission on it. If somebody brought in a dollar, we would get maybe a quarter. That's the way we made the money. For every buck we collected, we got a commission. So that's the way it was before Medicare. So that when Medicare came onto the scene in 1970, you know, with the first experiment in Saskatchewan, and Tommy Douglas and the CCF government there, this kind of thing went out the window. The collection agencies in that particular role disappeared after 1970. And I guess my concern now, and why I'm interested in this now, I'm just saying I don't want to see these things coming back, and they can. This may sound strange to the listener now who can't conceive of owing the doctor a doctor bill because we have Medicare. It's available. But there was a time when it wasn't available and when you had to pay. And in the Depression, when unemployment were in the teens and when jobs were scarce and income was low and it was a different kind of experience. When I talk about the bad time, and I do it, and I'm prepared to describe it now, only to emphasize that what we have now in terms of health services is sacred, and it is of utmost importance to maintain it and not to allow ourselves to drift back into the kinds of privatization of Medicare or of medical services that we had at that time. Health should not become a what we call a commodity, a product to be bought and sold on the market as you would walk into a supermarket and you buy a doctor's fee. Can one put it more plainly than that?
According to the Canada Health Act, private insurance should not cover duplicate services, that is, services that are covered by the public system. Yves Millette, the Vice President of the Canadian Life and Health Insurance Association's Quebec chapter, argues that the surgeries listed in Bill 33 are not duplicate.
Yves Millette, je suis vice-président aux affaires québécoises de l'Association canadienne des compagnies d'assurance de personnes. Cette association représente la grande majorité des assureurs de personnes qui œuvrent au Canada. Alors, l'assurance de personnes comprend l'assurance vie, l'assurance santé, les rentes et d'autres produits connexes d'épargne. Nous, on a pris position clairement en disant que nous, on voulait rester complémentaires et non pas duplicatif. Les assureurs privés ne voulaient pas avoir un two-tier system. On a dit au gouvernement que l'ouverture qu'il faisait, telle qu'elle était faite dans la loi 33, si elle se limitait aux trois chirurgies prévues, tant qu'elle ne sera pas étendue à autre chose, que ces trois chirurgies-là ne permettront pas à l'industrie globalement d'émettre des contrats d'assurance parce que ça n'y a pas un bloc suffisamment grand de risque pour permettre de mettre des contrats privés. Il y a peut-être certains assureurs qui vont émettre certains types de contrats très spécifiques. Les assureurs, ces dernières années, ont apporté beaucoup d'attention pour mettre en application des produits qui vont être utiles pour faire face au vieillissement de la population, notamment les assurances pour les soins de longue durée et les assurances pour les maladies critiques, critical illness et long-term care insurance, que les assureurs ont ces produits-là maintenant et que dans la mesure où ces assurances-là peuvent servir sur une base complémentaire pour compléter les régimes publics, les assureurs vont préférer émettre ce type de produit-là. Le premier, c'est que nous sommes d'accord avec la loi canadienne de la santé. Deuxièmement, nous avons toujours été et nous considérons et nous continuerons d'être complémentaires au régime public et non pas duplicatifs, c'est-à-dire qu'on offre les mêmes produits. Troisièmement, les ouvertures telles qu'interprétées par la loi 33 sont insuffisantes pour permettre à l'ensemble de l'industrie d'offrir une protection. Et quatrièmement, nous, on préfère, dans le cadre du vieillissement de la population, offrir des produits qui vont être largement accessibles à une population vieillissante, qui sont des maladies critiques et des soins de longue durée. Ben, nous, on considère que c'est complémentaire, pour le peu qu'il va y avoir d'ouvert, que c'est complémentaire parce que ce qui est permis par la loi 33, c'est de le faire avec des médecins désengagés du système. Donc, des médecins qui ne seront pas payés par le système. Donc, c'est pas un two-tier système dans le sens où vous n'avez pas le choix d'aller au public ou au privé et que le médecin va être payé ou pas par le public ou par le privé. Le médecin, lui, va avoir fait le choix d'être engagé ou pas engagé, d'être remboursé ou pas. Et s'il a décidé de ne pas être remboursé, vous pouvez déjà, le rituel, payer ce médecin-là de votre poche. Il n'y a rien qui vous empêche de le faire. Au Québec, c'est là que l'assurance privée va plus loin qu'ailleurs au Canada sur rendre des services MRI notamment et d'autres services qui seraient rendus normalement dans des hôpitaux.
Millette argues that because doctors cannot work in both the private and public systems, the private surgeries covered by private insurance are not duplicate, even when the same surgeries are also offered in the public system. Lee Soderstrom, a health economist and professor at McGill University, warns against playing word games and stresses that these are duplicate services. He shows his concern about leaving health up to the private sector.
What is amazing in the Quebec discussion is there's no recognition of the debate that has gone on in the American medical profession over private clinics. In the AMA, about 1990, under great pressure from U.S. Congress, said that it was unethical for physicians to have an ownership stake in private clinics. The idea was that there is a financial incentive that might get in way of good medicine. And the story here is that in the mid to late 1980s, a number of U.S. congressmen realized that physicians were developing various private x-ray facilities, labs, physiotherapy facilities, etc. And what physicians would do is when a patient came in, they might see him in an outpatient service in the hospital, they might see him in their private office, the physician would recommend that they go to this clinic down the street where the physician has a financial interest. Even in the American setting, there's a recognition that for physicians to have an ownership stake in these private clinics is a conflict of interest. There has been no recognition of that in the Quebec discussions. There has been no recognition of this by the College of Physicians here. The private clinics may end up costing us more than what it would if we provided it publicly. Patients may be squeezed into paying for things that they're not particularly interested in, and the incentive to get patients into those clinics becomes even greater when the physician has a financial stake in the success of those clinics. Mm-hmm. One of the concerns about the two-tiered system is that in a world where some people have more political influence than others, that people who are fairly wealthy, middle class, upper middle class, university professors, corporate executives, etc., they have the means to essentially go the private route. And these are also the people who have a fair amount of influence. You know, as long as you have a single universal system, what that means is these people are in the system and they have a stake in how that system runs. The concern is that if those people are able to get outside the system or can easily get other services and get them fairly quickly without having to endure waits, etc., that they're going to lose concern about the public system and the quality of care in the public system, quality of access, what have you, will deteriorate. And so the question is there any evidence that shows that this kind of phenomena is real? And one very real example of it is the Medicaid program in the U.S. Medicaid in the U.S. is for the poorest of the poor. The people covered by Medicaid, by and large, probably pay next to zip in taxes. Their political influence is probably next to zip. But they're very dependent on this public program. And so there's tremendous political pressure on both the states and the federal government that look after the Medicaid program to keep the cost of the program down. And so what you have is a program where the fees are low and where there's a lot of red tape. People covered by Medicaid have problems getting services. The docs don't like to deal with people because they're going to get low fees. They don't like to deal with Medicaid patients because they're going to have to jump through a lot of red tape. And this is pretty well documented. The cost of administering the public plans is remarkably low. The Americans spend a lot more money than we do on health care on per capita terms. Probably at least half of the difference is just the fact that the Americans have a much more inefficient way of financing with lots of private insurance, lots of public plans. And so I worry with a two-tier system that we will lose that efficiency. There's a fair amount of stuff in medicine that is going on that probably doesn't yield much in the way of health benefits. How do you deal with that? And the attitude that is growing up in recent days and the medical profession and particularly private interests, what they're pushing is the idea that let's introduce these services willy-nilly But people are, may be hurt both financially as well as health-wise with this kind of an attitude. I mean, there's that's the difficulty. And there's a real danger that once you open it up to the private, people are going to be stampeded into using a lot of services that may not matter. And one of the things that you can do with the public system is you have a better ability to control those costs. It becomes harder and harder for people to get access to services in the public system because the docs want to be in the private sector. You're going to force more and more people to move towards the private sector, which is less efficient than the public sector.
The private side of healthcare is taking up more and more space, and in privatization, Montreal is leading the way. One of the major concerns in the public-private debate is whether health can be considered a commodity, something that can be bought and sold on the market, like a pair of jeans or an iPod. And for those of you who might be thinking, what does all this have to do with me? Here is Brianna Hersey's answer to your question.
We are all equally implicated, because what people don't understand is that you will get sick, you will get hurt, you will get hit by a car, you will die, you will get sick. You know, this is, people need to realize this. Everybody, health is temporary. Impairment, illness, disability is the natural way of life. People get hurt, and this is what happens. People get sick, this is what happens. So everyone should be caring. And people just aren't, because they don't think it resonates with them. Especially with young people who listen to CKUT. Like, this is a really big deal.
You've been listening to music by Marnie and Melissa, a local Montreal duo. I'm Carolyn Morris, and this is The Wednesday Morning After on CKUT.
Don't know where you've got to. Which towns you've passed through along the way, and I stopped feeling strong the moment you stopped looking, the moment that I took you. Come.